The next morning was bright and clear, like all Holywood days, and they made a start on the interestingy and curious adventures of Cohen the Barbarian. Dibbler had worked on it all evening, he said. The title, however, was Silverfishes. Although Dibbler had assured him that Cohen the Barbarian was practically historical and certainly educational, Silverfish had held out against Valley of Blood. Victor was handed what looked like a leather purse, but which turned out to be his costume. He changed behind a couple of rocks. He was also given a large blunt sword.
"Now," said Dibbler, who was sitting in a canvas chair, "what you do is, you fight the trolls, rush up and untie the girl from the stake, fight the other trolls, and then run off behind that other rock over there. That's the way I see it. What do you say, Tommy?"
"Well, I... Silverfish began.
"That's great," said Dibbler. "Okay. Yes, Victor?"
"You mentioned trolls. What trolls?" said Victor.
The two rocks unfolded themselves.
"Don't you worry about a thing, mister," said the nearest one. "Me and old Galena over there have got this down pat."
"Trolls," said Victor, backing away.
"That's right," said Galena.
He flourished a club with a nail in it.
But, Victor began.
"Yeah," said the other troll.
What Victor would like to have said was, "But you're trolls, fierce animated rocks that live in the mountains and bash travellers with huge clubs very similar to the ones you're holding now, and I thought when they said trolls they meant ordinary men dressed up in, oh, I don't know, sacking painted grey or something."
"Oh, good," he said weakly.
"And don't you go listening to them stories about us eating people," said Galena. "That's a slander, that is. I mean, we're made of rock. What did we want to eat people for?"
"Swaller," said the other troll.
"You mean swaller?"
"Yeah.
What's we want to swaller people for? We always spit out the bits. And anyway, we've retired from all that now," he added quickly. "Not that we ever did it."
He nudged Victor in a friendly fashion, nearly breaking one of his ribs.
"It's good here," he said conspiratorially. "We get $3 a day plus a dollar barrier cream allowance for daylight working. On account of turning to stone until nightfall otherwise, what is a pain?"
said his companion.
"Yeah, and it holds up shooting and people strike matches on you.
Plus our contract says we get 5 pence extra for use of our own club," said the other troll.
"If we could just get started," Silverfish began.
"Why is there only 2 trolls? Complained Dibbler. "What's heroic about fighting 2 trolls? I asked for 20, didn't I?"
2's fine by me," Victor called out.
"Listen, Mr. Dibbler," said Silverfish, "I know you're trying to help, but the, basic economics..."
Silverfish and Dibbler started to argue. Gaffer, the handleman, sighed and took the back off the moving picture box to feed and water the demons who were complaining. Victor leaned on his sword.
"Do a lot of this sort of thing, do you?" he said to the trolls.
"Yeah," said Galena, "all the time. Like, in A King's Ransom, I play a troll who rushed out and hit people, and in The Dark Forest, I play a troll who rushed out and hit people. And in Mystery Mountain, I play a troll who rushed out and jumped up and down on people. It doesn't pay to get typecast."
"And do you do the same thing?" said Victor to the other troll.
"Oh, Moraine's a character actor, ain't you?" said Galena. "Best in the business."
"What does he play?"
"Rocks."
Victor stared.
"On account of his craggy features," Galena went on. "Not just rocks. You should see him do an ancient monolith. You'd be amazed. Go on, Maury. Show him your inscription."
"Nah," said Moraine, grinning sheepishly.
"I'm thinking of changing my name for moving pictures," Galena went on. "Something with a bit of class. I thought, Flint."
He gave Victor a worried look, insofar as Victor was any judge of the range of expressions available to a face that looked as though it had been kicked out of granite with a pair of steel-toed boots.
"What you think?" he said.
"Oh, it's very nice."
"More dynamic, I thought,"
said the prospective Flint. Victor heard himself say,
"Or Rock. Rock's a nice name."
The troll stared at him, its lips moving soundlessly as it tried out the alias.
"Cool," he said. "Never thought of that. Rock."
I like that. I reckon I'd be due more than $3 a day with a name like Rock.
Can we make a start? Said Dibbler sternly. Maybe we'll be able to afford more trolls if this is a successful click. But it won't be if we have to go over budget, which means we ought to wrap it up by lunchtime. Now, Murray and Galena.
Rock, corrected Rock.
Really? Anyway, you two rush out and attack Victor, okay? Right, turn it.
The handleman turned the handle of the picture box. There was a faint clicking noise and a chorus of small yelps from the demons. Victor stood looking helpful and alert.
That means you start, said Silverfish patiently. The trolls rush out from behind the rocks, and you valiantly defend yourself.
But I don't know how to fight trolls, Victor wailed.
Tell you what, said the newly christened Rock. You parry first, and we'll sort of arrange not to hit you.
Light dawned.
You mean it's all pretending? Said Victor.
The trolls exchanged a brief glance, which nevertheless contrived to say, amazing, isn't it, that things like this apparently rule the world?
Yeah, said Rock. That's it. Nothing's real.
We ain't allowed to kill ya, said Moraine reassuringly.
That's right, said Rock. We wouldn't go round killing ya.
This stops our money if we do things like that, said Moraine morosely.
Outside the fault in reality, they clustered, peering in with something approaching eyes at the light and warmth. There was a crowd of them by now. There had been a way through once. To say that they remembered it would be wrong, because they had nothing as sophisticated as memory. They barely had anything as sophisticated as heads, but they did have instincts and emotions. They needed a way in. They found it. It worked quite well the sixth time. The main problem was the trolls' enthusiasm for hitting each other, the ground, the air, and quite often themselves. In the end, Victor just concentrated on trying to hit the clubs as they whirred past him. Dibbler seemed quite happy with this. Gaffer wasn't.
They moved around too much, he said. They were out of the picture half the time.
It was a battle, said Silverfish.
Yeah, but I can't move the picture box around, said the handleman. The imps fall over.
Couldn't you strap them in or something? Said Dibbler.
Gaffer scratched his chin.
I suppose I can nail their feet to the floor, he said.
Anyway, it'll do for now, said Silverfish. We'll do the scene where you rescue the girl. Where's the girl? I distinctly instructed her to be here. Why isn't she here? Why doesn't anyone ever do what I tell them?
The handleman took his cigarette stub out of his mouth.
"She's filming a bold adventure over the other side of the hill," he volunteered.
"But that ought to have been finished yesterday," wailed Silverfish.
"Film exploded," said the handleman.
"Blast! Well, I suppose we can do the next fight. She doesn't have to be in it," said Silverfish grumpily. "All right, everybody. We'll do the bit where Victor fights the dreaded Balrog."
"What's a Balrog?" said Victor. A friendly but heavy hand tapped him on the shoulder.
"It's a traditional evil monster, what is basically Murray, painted green with wings stuck on," said Rock. "I'll just go and help him with the painting."
He lumbered off. No one seemed to want Victor at the moment. He stuck the ridiculous sword into the sand, wandered away and found a bit of shade under some scrubby olive trees. There were rocks here. He tapped them gently. There didn't appear to be anyone. The ground formed a cool little hollow that was almost pleasant by the seared standards of Holywood Hill. There was even a draught blowing from somewhere. As he leaned back against the stones, he felt a cool breeze coming from them. Must be full of caves under here, he thought.
Far away, an unseen university, in a draughty, many-pillared corridor, a little device that no one had paid much attention to for years, started to make a noise.
So, this was Holywood. It hadn't looked like this on the silver screen. It seemed that moving pictures involved a lot of waiting around, and if he was hearing things right, a mixing up of time. Things happened before the things they happened after. The monsters were just Murray painted green with wings stuck on. Nothing was really real. Funnily enough, that was exciting.
"I've just about had enough of this," said a voice beside him. He looked up.
A girl had come down the other path. Her face was red with exertion under the pale makeup. Her hair hung over her eyes in ridiculous ringlets, and she wore a dress which, while clearly made for her size, was designed for someone who was 10 years younger and keen on lace edging. She was quite attractive, although this fact was not immediately apparent.
"And you know what they say when you complain?" she demanded.
This was not really addressed to Victor. He was just a convenient pair of ears.
"I can't imagine," said Victor politely.
"They say there's plenty of other people out there just waiting for a chance to get into moving pictures. That's what they say."
She leaned against a gnarled tree and fanned herself with her straw hat.
"And it's too hot," she complained. "And now I've got to do a ridiculous one-reeler for Silverfish, who hasn't got the faintest idea, and some kid probably with bad breath and hay in his hair, and a forehead you could lay a table on."
"And trolls," said Victor mildly.
"Oh, gods, not Murray and Galena."
"Yes, only Galena's calling himself Rock now."
"I thought it was going to be Flint."
"He likes Rock."
From behind the rocks came the plaintive bleat of Silverfish, wondering where everyone had got to just when he needed them. The girl rolled her eyes.
"Oh, gods, for this I'm missing lunch?"
"You could always eat it off my forehead," said Victor, standing up.
He had the satisfaction of feeling her thoughtful gaze on the back of his neck as he retrieved his sword and gave it a few experimental swishes with rather more force than was necessary.
"You're the boy in the street, aren't you?" she said.
"That's right, you're the girl who was going to be shot," said Victor. "I see they missed."
She looked at him curiously.
"How did you get a job so quickly? Most people have to wait weeks for a chance."
"Chances are where you find them, I've always said," said Victor.
"But how did you—"
Victor had already strolled away with gleeful nonchalance. She trailed after him, her face locked in a petulant pout.
"Ah," said Silverfish sarcastically, looking up. "My word, everyone where they should be. Very well, we'll go from the bit where he finds her tied to the stake. What you do," he said to Victor, "is untie her, then drag her off and fight the Balrog, and you," he pointed to the girl, you just follow him and look as rescued as you possibly can, okay?"
"I'm good at that," she said resignedly. "No, no, no," said Dibbler, putting his head in his hands. "Not that again."
"Isn't that what you wanted?" said Silverfish. "Fights and rescues?"
"There's got to be more to it than that," said Dibbler.
"Like what?" Silverfish demanded.
"Oh, I don't know. Razzmatazz.
Oomph.
The old Zonkaroony."
"Funny noises? We haven't got sound."
"Everyone makes clicks about people running around and fighting and falling over," said Dibbler. "There should be something more. I've been looking at the things you make here, and they all look the same to me."
"Well, all sausages look the same to me," snapped Silverfish.
"They are meant to. That's what people expect."
"And I'm giving them what they expect too," said Silverfish. "People like to see more of what they expect. Fights and chases, that sort of thing."
"Excuse me, Mr. Silverfish," said the Handleman above the angry chattering of the demons. "Yes," snapped Dibbler. "Excuse me, Mr. Dibbler, but I got to feed 'em in a quarter of an hour."
Dibbler groaned. In retrospect, Victor was always a little unclear about those next few minutes. That's the way it goes. The moments that change your life are the ones that happen suddenly, like the one where you die. There had been another stylized battle, he knew that much, with Murray, and what would have been a fearsome whip if the troll hadn't kept tangling it around his own legs. And when the dreadful Balrog had been beaten and had slid out of shot, mugging terribly and trying to hold its wings on with one hand, he'd turned and cut the ropes holding the girl to the stake, and should have dragged her sharply to the right when the whispering started. There were no words, but there was something that was the heart of words that went straight through his ears and down his spinal column without bothering to make a stopover in his brain. He stared into the girl's eyes and wondered if she was hearing it too. A long way off, there were words. There was Silverfish saying,
"Come on, get on with it. What are you looking at her like that for?"
And the Handleman saying,
"They gets really fractious if they misses a meal."
and Dibbler saying, in a voice hissing like a thrown knife, "Don't stop turning the handle!" The edges of his vision went cloudy, and there were shapes in the cloud that changed and faded before he had a chance to examine them. Helpless as a fly in an amber flow, as much in control of his destiny as a soap bubble in a hurricane, he leaned down and kissed her. There were more words behind the ringing in his ears. "Why is he doing that? Did I tell him to do that? No one told him to do that. And then I have to muck him out afterwards, and let me tell you, it's no... Turn that handle! Turn that handle!" screamed Dibbler. "Now, why is he looking like that?"
"Cool.
If you stop turning that handle, you'll never work in this town again.
Listen, mister, I happen to belong to the Handle Man's Guild. Don't stop. Don't stop."
Victor surfaced. The whispering faded, to be replaced by the distant boom of the breakers. The real world was back, hot and sharp, the sun pinned to the sky like a medal awarded for being a great day. The girl took a deep breath.
I'm terribly sorry, babbled Victor, backing away. I really don't know what happened.
Dibbler jumped up and down.
"That's it! That's it!" he yelled. "How soon can you have it ready?"
"Well, like I said, I got to feed the imps and muck 'em out."
"Right, right. It'll give me time to get some posters drawn," said Dibbler.
"I've already had some done," said Silverfish coldly.
"I bet you have. I bet you have," said Dibbler excitedly. "I bet you have. I bet they say things like, 'You might like to see a quite interesting moving picture.'"
"Well, what's wrong with that?" Silverfish demanded. "It's a bloody sight better than hot sausage."
"I told you, when you sell sausages, you don't just hang around waiting for people to want sausage. You go out there and make them hungry. And you put mustard on them. And that's what your lad there has done."
He clapped one hand on Silverfish's shoulder and waved the other expansively.
"Can't you see it?" he said.
He hesitated. Strange ideas were pouring into his head faster than he could think them. He felt dizzy with excitement and possibilities.
"Sword of Passion," he said. "That's what we'll call it. Not name it after some daft old bugger who's probably not even alive anymore. Sword of Passion. Yeah, a tumultuous saga of desire and raw what's-name in the primal heat of a tortured continent. Romance, glamour, in three searing reels, thrill to the death fight with ravening monsters, scream as a thousand elephants."
"It's only one reel," muttered Silverfish testily.
"Shoot some more this afternoon," crowed Dibbler, his eyes revolving. "You just need more fights and monsters."
"And there's certainly no elephants," snapped Silverfish.
Rock put up a craggy arm.
"Yes?" demanded Silverfish.
"If you've got some grey paint and stuff to make the ears out of, I'm sure me and Murray could..."
"No one's ever done a three-reeler," said Gaffer reflectively. "Could be really tricky. I mean it'd be nearly 10 minutes long."
He looked thoughtful.
"I suppose if I was to make the spools bigger..."
Silverfish knew he was cornered.
"Now look here," he began.
Victor stared down at the girl. Everyone else was ignoring them.
He said, "I don't think we've been formally introduced."
"You didn't seem to let that stop you," she said.
"I wouldn't normally do something like that. I must have been ill or something."
"Oh, good. And that makes me feel a lot better, does it?"
"Shall we sit in the shade? It's very hot out here."
"Your eyes went all smouldery."
"Did they?"
"They looked really odd."
"I felt really odd."
"I know, it's this place, it gets to you. Do you know," she said, sitting down on the sand, "there's all kinds of rules for the imps and things. They mustn't be worn out. What kind of food they get, stuff like that. No one cares about us, though. Even the trolls get better treatment."
"It's the way they go around being 7 foot tall and weighing 1,000 pounds all the time, I expect," said Victor.
"My name's Theda Whittle, but my friends call me Ginger," she said.
"My name's Victor Tugelbend, but my friends call me Victor," said Victor.
This is your first click, is it?
How can you tell?
You looked as though you were enjoying it.
Well, it's better than working, isn't it?
You wait until you've been in it as long as I have, she said bitterly.
How long's that?
Nearly since the start. 5 weeks.
Gosh, it's all happened so fast.
It's the best thing that's ever happened, said Ginger flatly.
Well, I suppose so. Are we allowed to go and eat? Said Victor.
No, they'll be shouting for us again any minute, said Ginger.
Victor nodded. He had on the whole got through life quite happily, by doing what he pleased in a firm yet easy-going sort of way, and he didn't see why he should stop that, even in Holywood. Then they'll have to shout, he said. I want something to eat and a cool drink. Maybe I've just caught a bit too much sun.
Ginger looked uncertain. Well, there's the commissary, but...
Good, you can show me the way.
They fire people just like that.
What, before the third reel?
They say there's plenty more people who are dying to break into the moving pictures, you see.
Good, that means they'll have all afternoon to find two of them who look just like us.
He strolled past Murray, who was also trying to keep in the shade of a rock.
If anyone wants us, he said, we'll be having some lunch.
What, right now? Said the troll.
Yes, said Victor firmly, and strode on.
Behind him he could see Dibbler and Silverfish locked in heated discussion, with occasional interruptions from the handleman, who spoke in the leisurely tones of one who knows he's going to get paid $6 today regardless.
We'll call it an epic. People will talk about it for ages.
Yes, they'll say we went bankrupt.
Look, I know where I can get some coloured woodcuts done at practically cost.
I was thinking maybe if I got some string and tied the moving picture box onto wheels so it could be moved around. People will say, that Silverfish, there's a moving picture smith with the guts to give the people what they want, they'll say. A man to roll back the, what's name of the medium. Maybe if I was to make a sort of pole and swivel arrangement, we could bring the picture box right up close to the...
What, you think they'll say that?
Trust me, Tommy.
Well, all right. But no elephants. I want to make that absolutely clear. No elephants.
Looks weird to me, said the Arch-Chancellor. Looks like a bunch of pottery elephants.
Thought you said it was a machine.
More of a device, said the Bursar uncertainly.
He gave it a prod. Several of the pottery elephants wobbled.
Rictor the Tinkerer built it, I think. It was before my time.
It looked like a large ornate pot, almost as high as a man of large pot height. Around its rim, 8 pottery elephants hung from little bronze chains. One of them swung backwards and forwards at the Bursar's touch. The Arch-Chancellor peered down inside.
It's all levers and bellows, he said distastefully.
The Bursar turned to the university housekeeper.
Well now, Mrs. Whitlow, he said, what exactly happened?
Mrs. Whitlow, huge pink and becorseted, patted her ginger wig and nudged the tiny maid who was hovering beside her like a tugboat.
Tell his lordship, Cassandra, she ordered.
Cassandra looked as though she was regretting the whole thing.
Well, sir, please, sir, I was dustin', you see.
She was dustin',
said Mrs. Whitlow helpfully. When Mrs. Whitlow was in the grip of acute class consciousness, she could create H's where nature never intended them to be.
And then it started making a noise.
It made a noise,
said Mrs. Whitlow.
So she come and told me, your lordship, has her per my instructions.
What kind of noise, Cassandra?
Said the Bursar, as kindly as he could.
Please, sir, sort of... She screwed up her eyes.
Blip, sir.
Blip,
said the Bursar solemnly.
Yes, sir.
Her plip,
echoed Mrs. Whitlow.
And that was when it spat at me, sir,
said Cassandra.
Expectorated,
corrected Mrs. Whitlow.
Apparently, one of the elephants spat out a little lead pellet, master,
said the bursar.
That was the pip.
Did it, begods, said the Arch-Chancellor. Can't have pots going round gobbing all over people. Mrs. Whitlow twitched. What did it go and do that for? Ridcully added.
I couldn't really say, Master. I thought perhaps you'd know. I believe Rictor was a lecturer here when you were a student. Mrs. Whitlow is very concerned,
he added in tones that made it clear that when Mrs. Whitlow was concerned about something, it would be an unwise Arch-Chancellor who ignored her.
About staff being magically interfered with.
The Arch-Chancellor tapped the pot with his knuckles.
What, old numbers, Rictor? Same fella?
Apparently, Arch-Chancellor.
Total madman. Thought you could measure everything, not just lengths and weights and that kind of stuff, but everything. If it exists, he said, you ought to be able to measure it.
Ridcully's eyes misted with memory.
Made all kinds of weird widgets. Reckoned you could measure truth and beauty and dreams and stuff. So this is one of old Rictor's toys, is it?
Wonder what it measured.
I think, said Mrs. Whitlow, that it should be put away somewhere, out of arm's way, if it's all the same to you.
Yes, 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 of course,
said the bursar hurriedly. Staff were hard to keep at Unseen University.
Get rid of it, said the Arch-Chancellor.
The bursar was horrified.
No, sir, he said. We never throw things out. Besides, it is probably quite valuable.
"'Hm,' said Ridcully.
"'Valuable.
"'Possibly an important historical artifact, Master.
"'Shove it in my study, then. "'I said the place needs brightening up. "'It'll be one of them conversation pieces, right? "'Got to go now. "'Got to see a man about training a griffin.
"'Good day, ladies. "'Arch-Chancellor, I wonder if you could just sign for—'
"'The bursar began.' But to a closing door. No one asked Cassandra which of the pottery elephants had spat the ball, and the direction wouldn't have meant anything to them anyway. That afternoon, a couple of porters moved the universe's only working risograph into the Arch-Chancellor's study. Literally, thingness writer, or device for detecting and measuring disturbances in the fabric of reality.